One of the BBC music guides tells the story of Beethoven as he was out walking in the country, singing as he was in the habit of doing. Suddenly, he was struck by a tremendous musical idea, which he apparently bellowed out to, in this case, a nearby herd of cattle. We're told the herdsman was so alarmed by the display that he drove Beethoven away from the field, thinking he was some sort of madman. Robert Simpson suggests we'll find a similar musical story in the finale of Symphony No. 8 by Beethoven. We'll encounter a big C-sharp that bursts boldly into a soft theme in F major, making so fierce a collision that the theme is hurled from its smooth, soft road surface onto a very rough field where it is scattered back by the equivalent of a herd of bulls, in this case, the brass and drums. Such is the finale of Beethoven's Symphony No. 8. We will learn soon about an especially lovely moment that we'll encounter in this very same work, Symphony No. 8. There will be many more such lovely moments in the fall concerts to be presented by the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra under the artistic leadership of music director and conductor Robert Helmisey. Saturday, November 12th in Wyalusing, Saturday, November 19th in Blakely, and Saturday, December 3rd in Tunkhannock. WVIA's Peter Wynn caught up with Robert Helmisey to learn more.
Looking at your upcoming program, if I were to want to choose one description, I'd say you've put together a very pretty program with a lot of very pretty music on this program. Just what did you have in mind when you did it?
Well, it was a kind of a combination of things. First of all, I wanted to have a symphony which was a classical piece in the real sense, and not too long. So I chose the Beethoven Eighth Symphony, which is one of his shortest symphonies, and one of the most interesting because it's really like four different parties in the same castle, you might say, held together mostly only by the fact that they all revolve around the key of F. And, of course, the Sixth Symphony also was in the key of F, but he referred to this as my little symphony in F. The Eighth Symphony. The first movement of it is a rather fast 3/4 time, and it kind of strides along boldly. The second movement was a parody poking fun at his friend Mazel, who invented the Mazel metronome, which is why we see MM64 or MM128 at the beginning of a piece. It refers to the metronome and the marking of how many beats per minute. So he wrote this very strict time going pop, da 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 da, dun dun da da dum ba ba bum, and so forth, and all the instruments get to play it, and it's always got this clock ticking in the background. That was to make fun of Mazel with the straightness, and you don't do a lot of retards. I think you have one or two retards in it, where you slow the music down for a minute, but mostly it just clicks along at this clock beat. The third movement is a very traditional menuetto. with a trio section, Menuet being a dance in 3/4 time from the era he lived in, the early 1800s. And the minuet is fairly strict, although it does have more brass in it than a lot of minuettos. He uses little short fanfares in there with the trumpets and timpani. And then the trio is this beautiful duet with two French horns and a clarinet circling around them. Really beautiful melody. So that's one of the places that's very beautiful in the piece, or in the concert. You mentioned that. The last movement is just kind of runs headlong to destruction, you might say. It just goes on and on very, very fast and trades instruments very quickly. It starts out with the violins, and then you'll hear the woodwinds play, and every once in a while the brass say, hold it, we're going to stop for a minute, and they play a fermata, which is a hold, and we stop, and then we go on. But it's interesting because it's a true symphonic development in the sense that all the themes are used, they're all in the relative keys that are used for a sonata form, and Tchaikovsky said this was Beethoven's best symphonic movement of all the symphonies. They're just the construction of the movement and the interest that it has in listening to it. So that's the piece that was kind of the centerpiece. And I wanted it to be on the first half, and I'll tell you why in a moment. So I put a very short piece before it, which is the Vaughan Williams Sea Songs, which are three sea chanties, or shanties, they're pronounced in England, woven around the woodwinds and the French horns and the brass. Very, very nice melodies. All the songs are very well arranged, and they're short. The three pieces all together in one stretch only take 4 minutes. So it's a nice opener to put before the Beethoven. Then we have the Beethoven, which is fairly short. Now, the second half is where some of that interest that you come in with the beautiful things are. It has the Brahms Academic Festival, and we're playing that on two of the concerts, and I'll tell you in a minute, we're playing three concerts, but I'm changing the program slightly for the third one. So in the first two, the Brahms Academic Festival Overture. And this is a piece that was commissioned by the professors at one of the universities in Germany. And they thought that they were going to get a symphony out of Brahms for giving him a commission. Well, Brahms thinking, well, it's the university. He said, I don't think I want to write a symphony for the university, so I'll just write an overture. And he wrote the overture on student drinking songs, mostly, and submitted it. And the faculty was horrified, and the students loved it. And it was such a great piece, and is still a great piece, that orchestras all over the world play it regularly, and they have for 100 years, 100 and some years. So that's the Brahms Academic Festival Overture, and it's really nice, nicely put together with nice tunes, and alternates fast and slow sections. And it's not very long either, so there's lots of room on the rest of the program for the other things I wanted to do. Now, one of the things I wanted to do, because we're getting close to Christmas time, is I wanted to put some music on that was kind of Christmassy, but not all carols, although there is one carol piece in it. And the carols, the Christmas Carol Festival, is going to be only on the third concert in Tunkhannock. The first two concerts have two interesting pieces, two sleigh ride pieces, one by Mozart. And Mozart was very clever. He liked dance music. He incorporated some German dance tunes into this piece. And it starts out with the kind of traditional, almost a menuetto or something similar, Ländler. And it has the strings playing in a very normal manner. And then he starts bringing in things like sleigh bells in different keys for the sleigh ride. And as the orchestra plays, one percussion player will shake one set of key bells, and the next one will set another key of bells. And so there are five different keys of the bells accompanying the music, and it's really very clever. Then he brings in, as part of the sleigh ride, a post horn solo, which really is kind of, I think of it as, well, they're out in a sleigh ride, and here comes the mail post the other way, and the post horn is announcing the arrival of the mail, and so you hear the post horn playing this typical thing, which is open tones, no vowels on a post horn, just a straight tube. So they can only play things like bugle calls, but it's a very well-written bugle call. And that combines with the sleigh bells finally at the end of the piece. And the whole piece takes about 5 or 6 minutes, and it's really very clever, and it's fun to listen to. A lot of sounds, and you see the percussion players all shaking different strings of sleigh bells, and we're using original horse bells. We're not using just any old set of jingle bells. We got strings of original horse bells, 100 years old leather straps that are falling apart and the whole thing, but they sound great, and so that's really going to be fun. Then the other sleigh ride piece that we have is going to be on some of the concerts, and that's the Leroy Anderson sleigh ride, which everyone knows because it has a horse whinny at the end and a whip crack in the middle. And it's a nice tune. And so forth. And that's very popular around Christmas time. And in fact, it may be Leroy Anderson's best known piece. He was a composer in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he wrote a lot of music for the Boston Symphony in the 40s and 50s. Syncopated Clock, most people know, older people from the television show that used to use it as theme music, and the Blue Tango, and many other pieces like it. The one thing that we are doing at the Duncanny concert that we're not doing at the other two is the longer arrangement of carols, because it's closer to Christmas. We're also doing another Christmassy piece, which is also nice just by itself, and that's the Waltz of the Flowers from the Nutcracker Suite. And the Waltz of the Flowers is very well known, and it's very singable, and the tune keeps coming back, and it's always done with a trio of French horns, which is in harmony, which is really nice. And so you have these lovely melodies alternating, and then the cellos get a shot at it, and it's just a wonderful piece, and everybody knows it. Just aside, when I was a kid, we had only 78 records, so that dates me pretty well. There was no LP yet, and one rainy afternoon, my sister and I were sitting around trying to do something, play checkers or play cards or something, figure out something to do. And we just kept playing the Waltz of the Flowers over and over and over on that side. We left it on the turntable. It started automatically when it got to the end again. And we listened to the Waltz of the Flowers for about 4 hours, over and over and over. And I kind of have that piece memorized since I was about 13 years old. But anyway, it's a nice piece. It's fun. It's from the Nutcracker, and everybody will recognize those tunes. So it's another one that has nice tunes. Another piece that's really a nice piece that has lovely melodies and also uses the harp. We have the harp on several pieces on this program. We have a wonderful harpist named Allison Simpson who comes and plays with us. And she's got a beautiful old Lyon & Healy 1921 harp, all restored and gold-plated. It's really a very nice instrument and sounds great. And she's going to also be playing the Vaughan Williams, who is the same composer that wrote the Sea Songs at the beginning, if you remember I talked about that. The Greensleeves song, he's arranged it, and he's inserted in the middle of it a 4-4 tune that's a very English tune, almost like a sea chanty, and it kind of sets off the 6-8 tune of the Greensleeves melody as a foil, the way Shakespeare would precede a tragic event with something very happy, and it makes the tragic event seem even worse. And the 4-4 tune coming in the middle of Greensleeves, and then the Greensleeves comes back, just points to how really beautiful the Greensleeves tune is. Now, Greensleeves is an interesting tune because it was a barroom tune back in the 14th century, 15th century. In fact, Shakespeare mentions it. And it seems like a simple tune at first. It's in what we call a minor key, but it actually originally was in one of the modal keys, which has kind of strange half steps and whole steps. And this tune, the way it's arranged by Vaughan Williams, utilizes that modal quality. It has the harp in it, which is very beautiful. It has nice woodwind solos, which could be done either by flutes or by recorders, which are instruments that were kind of like a clarinet and kind of had a mouthpiece like a flute and had fingered like a clarinet out in front of you. And they're still played sometimes, but we're doing it with four flutes. And Shakespeare did mention that tune, Greensleeves, in several of his works, so that we know that that tune has been around at least that long. Now, long about the 19th century, somewhere in the 1800s, the words to "What Child Is This?" were set to the Greensleeves tune, and so that's now become known as a Christmas carol, "What Child Is This?" Rather than Greensleeves. But it serves in both capacities because folk singers still sing it, and this arrangement particularly is very beautiful. And so that's another one of the pieces you referred to as lovely melodies in the beginning, or nice pieces. So that's pretty much what's on the program.
Now, you mentioned in the Mozart sleigh ride that there's a post-horn call. Is that going to be played on a French horn, or have you brought in a real post-horn?
because it actually calls for two post horns in two different keys, we couldn't get two post horns. So we're going to play it on a C trumpet, which has a very brilliant sound like a post horn. And Kim Smith, our first trumpet player, is going to play it combining the two, because in Mozart's original, the one answers the other. And so they don't both play at the same time. So she's going to play both of them and meld it together as one. And it will sound really nice as a post horn. That's the way it's done, except on recordings where they can go out and rent the instrument somewhere. Sometimes they'll do it with original instruments. Often it's just done on the one trumpet for the two parts.
Another thing that, some time ago I was reading program notes, liner notes on an old recording, an old LP recording, and the annotator suggested that the Greensleeves melody was actually the work of Henry VIII. Have you ever heard anything about that?
Well, I've heard that story too. I've never verified it. I don't know. It's probably verifiable on Wikipedia. But it's interesting because he was a musician to some extent. I think he played lute or something like that. And it's possible he wrote it. All his other things, it doesn't seem like he'd have much time to write music. But we won't go into those.
One of the things that I find very interesting is the makeup of your orchestra. It's a professional orchestra, and yet it's sort of a hybrid. It's sort of halfway between. It's not exactly a professional orchestra, but it is a professional orchestra. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, yes, we're happy to say that it sounds like a professional orchestra. It's actually a community orchestra with some fill-ins here and there where we don't have players. We have a large core, probably 38 to 40, of community players who play regularly and play every week. And then we always have a few people that can't make a concert, or something happens and they have to go to a funeral or go out of town for a weekend, something like that. And they tell us in advance, and we hire a professional to come in and play with us. Or we get another community player from somewhere. There are several community orchestras in the area that actually share players, not this immediate area, but in the larger geographical area. One is the Binghamton Community Orchestra. Some of those players play with us occasionally, and some of our players play there. The Southern Finger Lakes has a very good orchestra way out by Elmira, and some of their players play in all three orchestras. And we actually have some players that are professionals from the Williamsport Symphony that come and play. And then we have one or two from down around Reading who just consistently play with us because they like to play with us. And they are really very good amateur players, but they like playing with us. For instance, our principal viola player is Kathleen Baena, and she was a graduate of Ithaca College with a viola major. She's our principal player, and they not only love her playing, but she's really nice to work with too. And so everybody really likes her, and the viola section likes her a lot. So that's the kind of players we have, and we're able to assemble for the concerts, and sometimes we don't even have all the players for each of the three concerts. Sometimes we have to fill a chair two different ways, but we manage it by having them come to different rehearsals, and it works out.
Well, I also got the impression that a lot of your players are professional musicians in the sense that they teach music and so on, and they do this avocationally, but they're, really first-rate players.
Well, that's true, and we have probably six or seven, maybe more, music teachers, probably more, because some of them teach just privately, but some of them also teach in public schools. And of course, we have Friday night rehearsals, so the band directors that play with us can't make Fridays in the fall, but we arrange it by having a rehearsal on a different night or something, and they're very good players and they can do it. The other thing is we have professionals in the orchestra. For instance, our piccolo player, Karina Muller, is a obstetrics doctor in Wilkes-Barre, and also has a degree in flute playing. So she plays flute and piccolo. She's a very fine player. Several people like that that have double degrees in music and something else, and they are professionals in the other area, but music is their avocation now.
I find it absolutely fascinating, and you do achieve considerable quality.
Well, that's what we work for, and our rehearsals are very detailed. And you know the old saying, the devil's in the details. Well, the finished product doesn't happen just by playing through the music every week. It's hard, nose-grinding work sometimes, just going through some things that players might be unfamiliar with because some of the players haven't played before. In fact, a lot of the pieces some of the players haven't played. That depends on how experienced they are as professionals. But even then, you have to match styles. If you have four players in a section, they may come from different teachers along the line, Some have played more orchestra music, some have played more chamber music, where actually things like how you articulate, which is starting and stopping notes on any instrument, on the string instruments we do it with the bow, and with the other instruments we do it with blowing the air through and with our tongue. And you can either run notes together, which is called slurring, or you can separate them, which is called tonguing the notes. And so you have differences in articulation. It's kind of like a carpenter. They don't all come with the same hammer. And each carpenter has to come with several hammers, and then the ones that don't have them, you teach them new hammers. And so you wind up with everybody using the same tools, which are the articulations. And that's how you get a really professional sound. You don't get it if all the players are playing the way their Uncle Joe played when they were 6 years old, you know, or the teacher that they had when they were in high school. It keeps changing. As you get more professional, you find more ways to change your articulations and to change the way you're playing so the style matches everyone else's.
Absolutely fascinating. And then, of course, you also have different composers from different eras where sometimes the approach to the music is going to be different.
Absolutely. And that's a very good point, because in rehearsals, when we get done playing Beethoven and we're going to go to the Tchaikovsky, I always remind the players, now this is no longer Beethoven. We're not going to play the quarter notes the same way in the Tchaikovsky that we played them in the Beethoven, because it's a different style of music. And in the Beethoven first movement, the quarter notes are played kind of brusquely, and in the Tchaikovsky, they're played long and smooth. So you have the same note on the page, a quarter note, a little black dot with a stem on it, and in one case it'll be played short just because the music demands it. It doesn't say to do that, but that's the way it was played in his day and for that style of music. And then you go to 80 years later and you have the Tchaikovsky music and the quarter note now is played long. And so those are all learning things that the players have to digest and the conductor has to be aware of.
And that was conductor Robert Helmessy, founding music director of the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra, speaking with WVIA's Peter Wynn in anticipation of three concerts in the offing. The Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra under Robert Helmessy will perform Saturday, November 12th at 8 p.m. at Wyalusing High School, again the following Saturday, November 19th at 8 p.m. at the Peckville Assembly of God Church in Blakely, actually, and then Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at Tunkhannock Middle School as part of Christmas in Our Hometown. That's Sea Songs by Ray Vaughan Williams, along with the lovely Fantasy on Green Sleeves. And the program will vary, because as you get to Saturday, December 3rd, there will be some of the holiday fair that we heard about, but also the work that we're hearing in the background, Symphony No. 8 by Beethoven, the keystone work of the concert. You will also hear Sleigh Ride in Mozart's version, the Waltz of the Flowers from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, and November 12th and the 19th, the Academic Festival Overture of Johannes Brahms. It's music to be performed by the Northern Tier Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Robert Helmessy, Saturday, November 12th at Wyalusing High School at 8 p.m., Saturday, November 19th at the Peckville Assembly of God in Blakely, and that's Saturday, November 19th at 8 p.m., and Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at Tunkhannock Middle School. For more information, you will be able to find them in many ways, but their website is northerntiersymphony.org, northerntiersymphony.org. You can find them on Facebook, Northern Tier Symphony, and they actually have a YouTube channel, Northern Tier Symphony. So it's the Northern Tier Symphony under Robert Helmessy, Saturday, November 12th, 8 p.m., Wyalusing High School. The following Saturday, November 19th at 8 p.m., Peckville Assembly of God in Blakely, and then Saturday, December 3rd at 8 p.m. at Tunkhannock Middle School. For more information, on the web, northerntiersymphony.org, northerntiersymphony.org.